Campus FM 103.7 jiena Colin Fitz dan huwa il-pluralizmu fix-xandir. U llum minħabba l-mistieden li għandi se naqleb l-Ingliż għalkemm jifhem bil-Malti meta jiġi biex jitkellem bil-Malti jisibha daqsxejn diffiċli. Jason Zammit.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for having me, Colin, first of all.
A pleasure. You understand Maltese.
Obviously,
I mean, after quite a few years here. You've been in Malta now 30 years?
31.
But you were born in Canada.
I was born in Canada, but I've been here much longer than I was in Canada, but because I guess because of my job for so long of that period and my show always being in English
yes,
on all the stations I was on, my accent, or at least my knowledge of the Maltese language, never really went to that next level. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I still try with my kids make fun of me, by the way.
Really? From school, for sure.
Yes, but I do try. I learn with my kids now.
Yeah,
it's like That's a free cool. Maltese lesson instead of, you know, going to paying someone for private lessons. I take my kids' homework aside and try to do it myself.
But as our listeners will attest, I think, with a voice like that, you definitely were going to end up in radio at some point or another in your life.
Well, you know, it was always a wish of mine. When I was in high school in Toronto, in Canada, everybody tried. There was something called co-op or workplace, like a work placement, where I mean, like an internship, and everybody wanted the radio station. There was only one radio station that was available, and it was an AM station, but it was a cool, pop top 40 AM station, and everybody wanted that post. So it was almost impossible for the people who really wanted to get that slot, you know. And through my dad had a radio show in Maltese in Toronto.
Yeah. And he did some broadcasting in Malta as well when he came back.
Yes, he did.
He was on Calypso, the Gozo Calypso, right?
He helped at the beginning of 101, Radio 101. He helped a bit.
Set it up, yeah.
Yeah. And then, yes, of course, Calypso Radio, Calypso 102.3 in Gozo.
That's right. Joe Zammit
is my dad.
He
used to have a show.
His show was called The Entertainers.
He had a show called The Entertainers, that's right. And then a bit later on, he did something about Men of Brass. That's it.
Okay.
Men of Brass. Military tattoos. Different military bands from all over the world would send him material, you know, before the internet really kicked in, right? And it was easy to get.
Yeah.
You know, he would have to ask for these recordings from all over the world.
So but this is way them. Back in the 90s.
This was towards the late 90s, mid-90s to late 90s, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. So many interesting programs that places like Island Sound and Calypso 102.3 would have broadcast at the time.
Yeah.
And who knows what's become of them. They would have been recorded on reel, or on VHS.
He's got them all, though. Huh? He's
personally, he's got them still recorded.
He's an anorak, so he has them all. Yeah.
So you were in Canada, and your father did some work on radio in Canada?
He did radio and television. He did local radio, local television for the Maltese community on a channel called Graham, I believe it's called Graham TV. And the radio station was Chin FM, CHIN.
Okay.
But they called it Chin. It was, I believe it was Italian owned, but it was a multicultural station. Uh-huh. So they broadcast, you know, Greek. There were Greek shows, Italian shows, Maltese shows, Spanish shows, whatever the large local communities would all have a slot. And I used to go into the studio with him, and he used to sit me down in the corner. It was a big plush chair and a big radio mic live, and there was carpeting everywhere, and he'd be like, "Don't say a word. Don't even breathe." I remember once he told me, "Don't even breathe." And I used to wait for that red light to come on, you know, go off and go, "Can I breathe now, Dad?"
Sweet. But it sounds like a scene from that film with the Howard Stern movie.
Mm. That Private Parts?
His dad used to take him to the radio station, and that's where his love of radio came in.
Yes. Even though the content wasn't up my street at the time.
But the machinery.
The whole thing about being alive, it really got
absolutely.
To me.
So your family came back to Malta when?
They came before me. I was still in high school. I finished off secondary school in Toronto. My parents moved here 5 or 6 months before me in 1991. I got here right for the beginning of summer 1991. June 20 something.
And just in time for pluralism to start off in Malta.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because that kicked, two stations.
That like, kicked off when? That summer or the next
91,
year?
The 91. End of 91. Yeah. And then Calypso in Gozo, Calypso 102.3, opened up in 93, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so, yeah. I believe it was the I believe it was August 1993.
And were you involved from the beginning?
No, but my dad was.
Your dad was.
And the owner at the time had a very strict rule of, you know, he didn't want nepotism involved at all, which is something today I respect a lot. At the time, I couldn't understand.
So who
Dad,
was,
get me a gig. Come on.
I remember when I interviewed Corinne Muscat, she told us it was a Terry Bate.
Terry Bate, yeah, he was the principal owner, but there were local owners. Gozadin investors and co-owners.
Okay. And Terry was American or
he was Canadian. British born, mm-hmm. but Canadian. Yeah, yeah. Him and his wife were both Canadian, and they loved Gozo. They live in Gozo most of the year, you know. So yeah, and they brought all these BBC trained amazing presenters,
yeah,
which I learned, you know, everything I know from them, you know.
Yeah, same with Island Sound.
Yeah. Steve Joy and Pete Semester especially, as a big shout out to those guys. But yeah, and I had actually applied for a job at Island Sound Radio early 93.
Oh,
I just took a chance.
Even though you lived in Gozo.
Even though I lived in Gozo, but I was, I lived in Gozo, and I started doing voiceovers with a man. This is how I actually started.
Okay.
You might know Mark Spiteri. Mass Communications back in the day.
He had a lot of magazines.
And now magazines.
Another Maltese Canadian.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I think he set up that magazine, Homeworks, was one of his projects.
Yes, I believe so,
eventually.
Yes. Yeah. And he used to come to the bar that I was working at as a summer job.
Okay.
And we got to know each other, and, you know, I just naturally started doing voices, and he thought that'd be great. I can market that. I remember saying that I can market that. You know, or, I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Yeah, voiceovers. Have you ever done?" I was like, "No." I think it was a cola.
For
it was
a cola.
Yeah. a new cola that had arrived to Malta.
Okay,
and so I did this advert, and I remember hearing it on the air. You know,
went to his personal, to his own studio,
I went
his,
to his, yeah.
His company
his,
studio.
His, actually, no, he didn't even have that. He was in his farmhouse, farmhouse somewhere in Arp or Osri.
Okay.
And he had this really cool little gadget, and well, the advert came out really cool. And that's, I started in voiceovers first.
Okay.
Well before I did radio.
And you got paid for it as well.
And I got paid for it.
So that was amazing.
I got I think it was, I mean, it wasn't a lot, but it was a lot then.
But you
I think it was £10.
£10 was worth a lot of money.
1993? Yeah.
And the only station broadcasting in English at the time, 24 hours, because Bay Radio had some programs in English too, was Island Sound.
It was so Island Sound, yeah.
Obviously, you'd be listening to Island Sound.
Sure, yeah.
Plus and Calypso.
And Calypso, because of the connection I had with the guys at Calypso.
Yeah, but Calypso broadcast music sort of for older people.
It
was like retro music.
80s. I mean, the only thing from the 90s would be, you know, like maybe Meatloaf, Cher, Adams, you know, of the time.
Okay.
And everything else was classic, yeah.
So you sent a letter to Island Sound?
I actually went there.
Okay.
I went there, and I'm not too sure who I met. You know, I gave them my name. I'm pretty sure I gave them a cassette of some of the voiceovers I did.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Whatever. And and that was that. But I never heard back from them again until years later. When a colleague of
couple
mine,
of years later,
yeah,
I guess.
Moved from Calypso to Island Sound.
So how did you start off at Calypso in Gozo?
So I started off, and this is a true story. I started off with a show, and I was just doing recorded links because the owner wanted me to broadcast in Maltese.
I see.
And if you think my Maltese was a bit is limited now, you should have heard it in 94.
Of course. You know? You had just come back from Canada.
Yeah.
From Canada. You had never lived here.
No, I'd never. Just one holiday in 86.
That's all.
You know?
So it was also a culture shock, I guess.
For the record,
yeah,
my dad did send me to Maltese classes on a Saturday morning.
Really?
With the now famous Victor McAuliffe of the tenors. We used to go together.
Oh, okay.
We used to go together to Maltese lessons.
The international
weekend.
Group, the tenors.
Yeah. They're very international now because they've just been joined by a very famous Italian singer from Amici.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely.
And so even though I did that, my Maltese wasn't good enough to broadcast. Mm. Right?
Of course.
And plus I was very young. I was 19. Uh-huh. So my knowledge of older music wasn't as good as modern music. So they put me on a show called Jukebox Saturday Night. That was my first show on Calypso.
Okay. I remember the name.
Jukebox. It was just after the sports show, which at the time Calypso had the best sports show.
Wasn't it Mark, what's his name?
There was a few people who hosted the show, but they were all Brits from the BBC. Dave Roberts was one of them. Pete Semester was another.
Oh, I see.
They all took turns doing it. Uh-huh. But it was at the time, this was unheard of. It was a two-man show, the uh-huh. producer and the host. And the producer was cutting up all the clips from around the ground, from around the premiership. Back then it was called the Premiership, right?
Yes, of course. And they would go around the ground. At the time, there was no internet. But
they had digital editing. No one else. Not that I knew of.
But people would tune in. A lot of people would tune in.
Even
to the broadcasts of Saturday afternoon sports.
Even Il Maltin, who didn't understand English so much. But they understood football. The language of football.
Of course, absolutely.
And it was live. They were able to get the scores as they were happening at the moment, which was, for then, it was very novel. It was very
unique. Yeah. Oh, so after the sports show, there'd be...
Then it was the news, and then me.
Yeah, yeah.
This young, I think I was 19-year-old, uber Canadian-sounding kid, hosting a 50s and 60s radio show, because it was all 50s. And that's where that was like a baptism of fire for me, because it was...
thrown in at the deep end.
I mean, I knew my Beatles, and I knew my Stones, and I knew the cool stuff.
Yeah,
you know, Zeppelin, Dylan, but that was too cool for...
For the Jukebox Saturday night. It was more a rock and roll type show.
It was exactly that, rock and roll.
Eventually, Joe Cassar ended up presenting it, right?
Yes.
Who is still on air now, I believe, with the Maltese Calypso.
Even though it's a different frequency. Yeah,
still playing the same kind of music.
Exactly. But I tell you,
a certain generation of Maltese absolutely love.
It got me noticed. It got me noticed a lot, you know?
Uh-huh.
I had quite a few...
fans?
Housewives, if you will, who recognize my voice. Is it? That was fun. And then the owner thought, you know, I'm going to give you your own show, because this was the Jukebox. I'm going to put you on Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
Really early breakfast. Like I'm talking 7 o'clock Sunday morning. And he said, I'm going to put you on Sunday morning because if you mess up, no one will hear you. That was his exact words. I remember it. Fair enough.
I don't care.
He could have put me on. Listen, he could have put me on at 3 a.m. I still would have enjoyed it.
Would have done it. Yeah.
Of course I would have. Yeah.
But so meanwhile, you had other jobs. And
Yes. But
you were still starting to get into radio slowly, and it was your dream.
Yes. And then I was offered a full-time job maybe a year later.
At Calypso.
At Calypso, because I had become sort of like, you know, I got
part
it with
the team.
With the team. I was doing some voiceovers when they needed a young North American sounding voiceover, right? So I'd go in, and it was all good. And I did my time.
Yeah,
you know how you do.
You
go there when they need you. You stick around.
It's amazing. Radio stations, the turnover of people is often quite high.
It is.
So when you start off at the very bottom doing a midnight show or something, very quickly you find yourself filling in for someone during the day.
It's like,
and before you know it, they offer you a full time job.
In my case,
it ended up being sort of from presenting at midnight to come in and do some news for us because we need someone doing news. Oh, and will you present this show on the weekend? And before you know it, again. Full time.
Very much like hospitality.
Especially in the case of stations like Island Sound, to a certain extent, the old Bay Radio and Calypso, which had a lot of foreign presenters who were actually meant to be brought over to Malta to train the locals
and
then make their way back to the UK. Some of them stayed.
Some of them stayed.
And we were meant to take over. And that's exactly what happened.
And we have a lot to thank for those guys. One guy, I mentioned Pete Semester earlier and Steve Joy, also a friend of yours. And a Canadian guy with the most. I've never heard a voice like this man before. I never worked with anybody who had a voice like this. Shane Huntley was close.
Oh, yes.
This guy's name was Brian Phillips, and he had.
Really?
Oh, my God. Do you ever listen to that station called Gold in the UK?
In the UK.
Part of the Global Group, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, the guy on the jingles, if you hear he goes, Gold. And the way he says it, it's like, I'm still a radio anorak when I hear it. I go, ooh, listen to that guy's voice.
Yeah. But what is it about North American accents that make such good radio. I mean, even here in Malta, I mean, Terry Farrugia at the time, God rest his soul, you know, he made it big very quickly.
Yeah.
Corinne Muscat, you.
Maybe the novelty of it because it's here, maybe? I don't know. I mean, maybe for me, it was the British female voice that did it for me in broadcasting.
But
I love
also,
that.
I think also we had Maltese presenters, and at the time, we Maltese presenters, very good. I'm not criticizing.
Yeah.
But Malta was very much cut off from the rest of the world. We talk about local stuff, and our sort of focus was on local stuff and our own experiences. The British presenters would bring their experiences, so they were a little bit exotic, but still they were quite conservative, most of them, very BBC style.
Yeah.
Whilst the people like you and Terry and Corinne would come in and talk about stuff that happened in America or movies and things. And again, instead of saying a film, you'd say movie.
Yeah.
Or instead of saying pizza, you'd say pizza.
Pizza. Yeah, yeah.
And it would sound exotic.
I refuse to say pizza. That's one thing. Everything else I don't mind saying. Bil Malti, you know. I'm going on a food tangent right now because I'm hungry. But you know, anything, you know, pastizzi, yes. But when it came to pizza, I would always hold my ground. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
I must say pizza. I draw the line.
I think it's because even in the UK, you know, the presenters we had were quite conservatives, the ones that came over.
Sure, yeah.
Because there weren't that many shock jocks
at the time. Chris Moyles didn't come till after. You
but
know?
But in America, they existed since the 80s.
Yes.
So these presenters who would like be quite crazy on air, right? Yeah. And have zoo format, more than one person.
And two or three of them are still...
Yeah.
Doing what they did back in the day, but on bigger platforms now, like you mentioned Howard Stern, but Rush Limbaugh and Elvis Duran, who still does the Z100 breakfast show.
I
remember listening to him in the 90s.
Wow! And there was a guy called Rick Dees.
Rick Dees,
who we used to get on a program called on Saturday Night TVM would show Solid Gold.
Oh yes, of course he was on Solid Gold.
So he was the presenter of
Solid Gold Dancer.
It just sounds so. So it's like you're watching a movie, even though you're just listening to the radio.
And let's face it. I mean, let's call America America what it is. Everything is bigger and not always better, but you know, it has that sort of feel to it, right?
Yes.
Everything is bigger and better in America. You know, even the voiceovers, even the production.
Yes,
you know, and all
yes,
that.
Absolutely. We say the same thing in Maltese. Absolutely.
Yeah. Saturday mornings when I joined Island Sound, so a couple of years later, I replaced Terry Farrugia.
Uh huh. Because he went to Bay.
Exactly. So I was Terry's replacement.
Yes.
So I remember I did a week shadowing Terry. And we became friends. And then we started playing baseball together. So that was cool.
Uh-huh.
But more than that, so doing the drive time on Island Sound, part of my responsibilities was playing the chart show.
The
UK
Dr.
chart.
Fox.
Stock
UK
with chart, Dr. Fox.
Which would be sent
doctor,
every week.
Doctor.
At first they'd send them on reels to...
Chris Reels, then reel DAT
then
tapes.
On DAT tapes.
Digital audio tapes.
So you weren't just a presenter. Part of your responsibility was also being a tech person.
Which is what I learned. I learned that at Calypso, by the way.
How to run the equipment,
and I was making it, producing ads, producing the sports show. I would help on the sports
and
show.
And that's another way. That's also something that you were taught probably by these foreign presenters who were over.
Exactly.
I remember, for example, Steve Joy telling me when you put some music at the end, underneath a voiceover. When I would help with producing advertisements, he said, "Stop the music slightly before the last word."
Yeah.
You know, these little sort of things.
Yeah, little tricks, yeah.
Little
and it works.
Tricks which really work in the production.
The ear will pick that up.
Yeah. The first lesson people like you and I were taught, I think, by our ex-BBC or whatever presenters was not to fader dance.
Yes.
There's a word for it.
Yes, yes. Let's use the word dance. Yes, yes.
You know, up and down, up and down.
Up and down,
That's the first lesson I was taught. Like, don't put the music up and down, up and down. Keep it. Put the music down. Say what you have to say. Put it up again, and that's it.
But
and lesson two, never talk over the lyrics.
Oh, never crash lyrics.
No, yes.
No, that was... My program director at the time and the station owner would call me up if that would happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I kept going on, you know, and I crashed the vocals.
Yeah.
And we had no excuse for it because back then,
a countdown, right?
We had a visual digital countdown
yes.
on the songs. And we didn't get that till years later at Island Sound, remember? Yeah.
Of course, because Calypso was a computerized station. Radio 1 Live and Calypso, the Gozo Calypso, were the only two in Malta that started off as a computerized station.
Exactly.
Primitive computer.
Oh, it's very primitive, but it did the job, you know? It did rudimental editing, you know? Yeah. Splicing, just, you know, cut and paste, that kind of thing. But it was digital. You could be exact. Yes. You know, you could add.
And also the music, you could play, just select on the screen.
Yes, yes.
And play, and behind you, you'd hear the massive CD player.
CD racks,
CD racks, like a jukebox.
We had.
Finding the CD, putting it in, and
they were on carousels.
Yeah.
Each one had 18 discs.
Yes.
So three cartridges of six.
Yes, yes.
And obviously, because they're moving components often. Not too often, but sometimes you'd have a tray error.
Oh.
One of the CDs would get caught because the trays were literally going in and out all the time, right?
So that gave you an opportunity to fill in.
Yeah. So we had emergency music on backup on the PC or somewhere else.
Yeah. And yes, you had like old computers, 90s computers, but you could start to do some editing on them
and even
upload some music, not much.
Not much, because they couldn't take much.
It couldn't take much, but you'd have some songs to play directly from the computer rather than the computer.
And we were so impressed because they would start instantaneously. I know if there's anyone under the age of 30 right now listening, there was a time when that was actually very impressive.
Yeah. You know? Is 90s we're talking, way before
early 90s.
Downloading.
Oh, yeah.
Before social media.
About six, seven years before Napster.
Absolutely. Yeah. And mobile phones were something new. Mm. Not even mobile phones, not even SMS.
We had one of those car phones.
Yeah, with a handbag.
With the handbag, and it was so cool. And I remember going, we used to frequent this wine bar in Victoria, Gozo. Yeah. And I just remember one of the Calypso DJs bringing it with him. No use of it, but just we were young, right?
Yeah, it's like this showing off.
You would see this on television, on MacGyver or something, or whatever was the hottest show back then, you know. Yeah. And we had this. I was like, oh, Dakshino, you know, mobile, you know, cellular phone.
That's what it was called. Yeah. And the company was called Telecel.
Yes, of course. And it was the only company.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah. So Jay, let's conclude your adventures at Calypso, and then we'll do another show where we can talk about Island Sound, XFM, and all your other adventures in radio.
Absolutely.
But Calypso, Simon Lumsden was another personality who worked.
Yes, yes. He's still on the island.
Yes, and he worked.
He was there at the
Calypso.
Beginning. He was there. Yeah. He was there before I was. Simon was actually the chap who reluctantly would come with me on my motorcycle to because he was charged with teaching me the desk and everything. Yeah. So I do remember, I have fond memories of him reluctantly getting on my motorcycle because I always drove a motorcycle.
Okay.
Before I had a car, I was on a motorcycle. And that lasted for, I think, a year and a half or so until I got the call from Malta.
Yeah. But Calypso, who are your listeners mostly? As in, we mentioned earlier, maybe older people, housewives, sort of that generation that liked rock and roll and Elvis.
They were all predominantly older than me. I mean, of course, my friends would listen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
when you were on,
when I was on, and my family and everything like that. But it wasn't just people who were into Elvis or the Beatles or whatever. We did have a 35 to 50 year old audience, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was
lots of expats. I mean, go to
lots
the
of
time,
expats.
Lots
yeah.
of people from all over the world who lived there.
Yes,
you
yes,
know,
yes.
Or Gozotins who had come back from from
absolutely,
being immigrants.
Absolutely, yes,
yeah?
yes, yes, and so and second generation
returned Australians, returned Maltese Australians, returned Maltese Canadians.
Yeah. We always had that challenge of competing with the Maltese stations.
But in Malta,
I'm talking about Calypso 102, obviously.
Yes.
But we were growing and we were getting noticed and we had some big competitions. You know, I remember when we gave away a car, and I remember back then the CEO or the CEO of Daewoo came for the giveaway and for the photo op
from the international
company. from Korea
or
it was great. And
because I believe Daewoo
was competition,
wasn't it? A case because Daewoo were using the Maltese market, Malta and Gozo, as a sort of test case before they started exporting to Europe. I remember reading somewhere.
Remember how old I was?
Sure,
I
wasn't Daewoo or Kia.
Yeah. I never got any of those memos. I was just told to read this and
okay.
And yeah. But yeah.
And,
probably.
And advertising was good?
Advertising was great. The thing I loved about advertising and the thing that Calypso, I think, taught, well, I learned at Calypso, was the creative writing.
Uh-huh.
And there was a good team.
Oh, writing the ads, you
writing
mean?
The ads.
Oh, okay.
We made some great, fun ads that even today, if we were to play them today, uh-huh, like scenario ads that you never heard back then. For example, one was for a hotel. I'll tell you this. It was a great ad for a hotel in Gozo, uh-huh, that sounded a little like Hotel California.
Okay.
And that's what we did with the advert. Uh-huh. And the advert was a recording studio scenario. We have the band, and we'd start it off like a tape would start, you know, welcome to the Hotel California. And then the producer, very camp, played by Steve Joy, would come in on the tannoy, you know, on this talk back. No, it's not California. It's and the name of the hotel.
Oh, I see.
And it was this, it was great, and it was a minute long. Uh-huh. And it was like, how are you going to get this on the air? And then in comes the boss, the owner of the station. How long is it? That's how he spoke, by the way. We call him Big Tex sometimes, just because he sounded like a Texan, but he wasn't. And he goes, how long is it? And we said, it's almost a minute. And he goes, great, it'll eat into the barter we owe them nicely. So it was great. We created this ad far too long, you know, and there was nothing on air like it that I ever heard. It was just this like what you hear even on these days, these creative ads.
Yeah, yeah. But this was the start, exactly, the early to mid-90s.
Yeah.
Calypso, also Island Sound used to do some.
Sure, yes. No, they had great ads too.
I remember, what's his name? Alan Montanaro, also known as the Dame in many pantos, was one of the people responsible for creating ads at Island Sound. And they'd be very creative.
Very.
And up till that point, Malta had been used to adverts just being, you know, very basic.
Sale.
Exactly. But, you know.
Which you still hear sometimes.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
So this is the time when adverts started to become more adventurous.
Yes.
And that was quite tough, actually, to convince the advertiser sometimes,
of course,
not to do a straight sort of,
because they had to spend more
traditional ad, but of course.
But as we all know, uh-huh, and it's, I've obviously, as you know, I've produced, God knows how many ads I've produced in my
probably
life,
thousands
easily, and I remember all the ones that worked, that really worked, were the ones that took that extra, you know, 2-3 days sometimes, maybe more, to write.
Yeah.
You know, not just a humoru, uh-huh, you know, boom, boom, boom. You know, these, and they all needed to be a minimum of 30 seconds. You can't create a story, you know, in 10 or 15 or 20 seconds, even though those are the standards, right? So those were fun times because it was new. That those length of adverts were new.
Which then led to the slight battle as well between the stations that were trying to be creative and get the advertisers to spend a bit more money for creativity and a higher level versus those stations that were selling adverts at very, very cheaply.
Yes, but many of them. So that's also a very smart model because it's high profit.
True.
Because the ads are not costing much to make.
But they weren't very professionally made.
No, you couldn't really
compare them.
No.
So the owners of the stations that were trying really hard were always in a constant battle with the other owners who had their own reasons for, you know, using that business model.
Sure, yeah.
And that led to maybe some stations eventually, you know, closing down because of this money situation.
You know, I honestly think if Island Sound had opened today, you know, or the last 5 years...
Would have done better.
I think it would
have remained.
Or at least, at least rated a lot higher than it ever did, you know?
Yes, well, especially because of the much larger amount of international people
in
Malta now than there were at the time. So, Jason, I'm going to conclude here for today, but we'll continue next week.
Will there be a part two?
There will be a part two where you've got so much more to tell us about your adventures in Maltese radio.
I look forward to coming back.
Jason Zamit, originally Jason Zamit.
Oh, that's a story as well. I was called up on that. I believe somebody complained to one of the columns in the Times.
Yeah, really? Because you started off?
I started off saying Zamit. It just came out. I said Zamit because everybody in Canada called me Zamit.
Called you Zamit.
Yes,
that's how you were used to being called.
I knew it was Zamit. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Of course I knew it was Zamit. I knew my surname. But I was just, you know, You know how you are when you're
you were young. I was and then you young to be a presenter. Yeah, you know, yeah.
I just should have went with the name I was always born to have, JJ McKay, or something like that. One of those Americanata radio names. I should have went with that.
So we'll talk again next week. Jason Zamit, mi outlita putseba Campus FM il pluralismu fi xandiri na Colin Fitz til social program jitella kol fuq sit elettroniku ta Campus FM inkomplu l-istoria ta Jason f'din essenzi il-ġimgħa d-dieħla. Saħħa.